The future is in buying and selling companies, in essence, taking these small companies, putting them together and selling them to private equities. The big companies have all the money, but they don't want to do the work and they're just sitting there. And anybody thinks real estate is the future, for someone who's done over 1,000 real estate deals myself, I will tell you, they don't want real estate. They want small companies. They want companies that work very well. We've got someone here who probably is the man who who's worked it, done it, consolidated, sold it, partnered with it, and has a lot of insight on, also speaks about it, and pretty good at what he does. In fact, I would say excellent at what he does. This is our second shot at making it together. The first time it didn't necessarily happen. Normally on the show, also welcome to the show. We've interviewed billionaires, goats, legends, celebrities, but it's interview like Lance Bachman, who do it every day, and where we often get more value because what he's going to talk about is what he did yesterday, what he's doing today, and what he will do tomorrow. Lance, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me. I love your show. It's one of the better shows out there, so I appreciate it.
Did you listen, or are you just saying that because it sounds good?
No, I've listened to multiple shows. I saw some of your Vince Vaughn ones. I've seen, you had a bunch of different people on there.
Yeah, a lot of different people. I'm not going to ask you more questions, just in case you did. Sometimes one time someone said, man, I love your book, big fan. They're like, it was like, great. What was your favorite part?
I didn't read your book.
That's just like, the whole book, it just was so, it was there a specific point? You know, the way you ended, it was kind of a full circle. Is yeah. And I'm like, oh, thank God. Like I was trying to reach it. So now I won't say it if I didn't read it, because then I didn't want to have to dig myself into a hole. I told him afterwards and then I felt bad. But here's the funny story about this. So like you, me, I don't need the prepper. I just ask questions. I know what questions. I've interviewed everyone. I have a meeting with Michael Dell, right? From Dell Computers. Dude's worth $60 billion. Sit down. And I mean, this is Michael Dell, right? The most humble guy. Guy's worth $60 billion. A Dell computer at his office. And I start asking him questions. And, you know, two or three great questions. And then I ask him another question. Yeah, that's in my book. Then I ask him another question 5 minutes later. Yeah, that's in my book. And then by the third time, it's like, next time you should read my book, it'll give you better context. Now, they were great questions. It just was explained in the book. And I don't know about you, but I can speed read really fast. I just get bored because most books, there's maybe three or four points. And so the first thing I did is I went and got the audio book. And I could tell you, it was like one of the better business books I read, because it was a transition of working on a $1 billion deal and almost falling apart, part back childhood and back. I had read his first book, but I didn't read there. And I learned that I look like an asshole in front of Michael Dell. So that is the story, Lance. So welcome.
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw you interviewed Arnold Schwarzenegger. I thought that was a good one. I forget the one girl you interviewed, an African-American woman, Kim someone. I never knew who she was. So I started watching that, but I didn't finish it yet.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because interviews with people like you who've done it. So put this in perspective. So you've just give us a little bit of background for people. I mean, normally I hate the background, but a lot of people don't know who you are. So that'll be good for this interview.
So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur out of Philadelphia area, Bucks County, Montgomery County. I've now built from the ground up and partnered with the ground up four different companies, sold into private equity. You know, I've done very well with that. I still own six companies and they're growing and they'll all be ready to sell in the next 24, 36 months. I don't build these monstrosity companies that do $300-$500 million. Our sweet spots, we take them, we get them up to 30, 35 million, 25 million, and we sell
them. So basically 4 million in EBITDA?
About $4 to $6 million in EBITDA.
Which then you're going to get $30 to $40 million exit, correct?
Correct. You get about 10x, you know, somewhere in that ballpark with those numbers, and do that repeatedly. And I just believe there's levels to this. I try to explain to people, even like sports, right? Like a D1 athlete versus a D3 athlete. They're both great athletes, but they're different levels of college commitment, different levels of what you're going to do every day.
Imagine you and I partner together, and I bring my partner Adam, because he says this, right? So you're at the bottom of the, as he calls it, the pyramid, right? And there is a buyer that's there. Now, some of these companies have had to go down to make things happen, but then they don't have the infrastructure or the patience to deal with the mindset of some of these people. And then you sell it to them, and their job is to take it to 10 million. And then 10 million, there's somebody else that wants to buy them. And then the next level, someone wants to buy them. And then that's where the Blackstones, Apollo at the top, right? They sit on top of that pyramid. And so you're absolutely right. But before you did that, did you start a company or like what's your background before you got into that?
So I was one of the founders of yellowpages.com, the outside division with AT&T, grew out to 159 million in revenue. Then I left. I started one SEO digital agency, had about 100 and some employees there, and I sold that to Sky Harbor Private Equity.
And what'd you sell that for?
I can't tell you, but you know, mid eight figures.
Okay. So, and by the way, what people don't understand, when you get an eight figure after, like, there's taxes and there's stuff like that, like the people think, oh, I got eight figures, but they don't understand. Some of it goes to the government unless you do some proper planning. Once you exit, Lance, and this is what I want to ask you. So you just exit for eight figures. And then like everybody else, what's next? But what's next is usually starting from the bottom sometimes, right? Like the idea of like, I worked my butt, I got the prize, I won the Super Bowl as Tom Brady holding the trophy. And then you're like starting at preseason again. And sometimes people could do it a second time, but third, fourth time, like you're like punishing yourself from the high to low. Tell us about your mentality to say what's next. Cause you could have retired. You could have set on that eight figure exit. So what motivates you and what was the next thing?
Well, I've sold four companies in the last 2 years for mid eight figures. So that's where I was fortunate. Makes sense. You know, I'm sitting in my office right now. We're building out a new office, and I'll show it to you. Like we're building.
Show it to you. This is live. Yeah, this is.
We're scratch. I mean, it's from scratch. I mean, we're building it. I mean,
by the way, should I tell Tom Brady about your hashtag you had on your wall?
Oh man. No doubt. Oh, it's listen, Tom Brady. I got my whole basement's Tom Brady here. I mean, it is the greatest athlete of our lifetime. There's nothing even closer.
By the way, as a Philly fan, and by the way, are the seats the Philadelphia Eagles too on the conference room?
Yeah. So right there, that's my podcast. I got another 2 months before I can bring my podcast back. That will be that I sold one of my companies that I had on, so I had part of the deal. But you see here, that's our training facility right here. Like we're building everything out from scratch. I mean, everything. Wow.
So what was the purpose of having an office here too? So when you say train, is your whole idea of like, okay, tell us about, is it, you're going to go after companies that you are, I'm going to, you know, train, what do you train? And then is the idea for you to find deal flow ultimately?
Well, right now I'm not taking deal flow. I'm looking for leaders, right? So I have enough companies right now that we're building and we're scaling to sell, right? So the only way you really can scale a company, I truly believe, is sales, right? So we do a ton of sales training. You know, when I meet someone and they say, I'm a great CFO or I'm a great operation person, I'm like, well, that's great. But
that is, by the way, did you buy or rent that office? Man, that's huge.
It's 30,000 square feet. So we're building.
Wow. That's so huge.
It is.
Own or rent or lease?
This is a rental. This is just so my digital agency that I had is up on the third floor, believe it or not.
Oh,
so
wow.
I sold. So I came right downstairs. The landlord and me here are good friends. And for what I pay here, you couldn't even buy this.
By the way, when did you sell the digital?
Last February.
Oh, wow. So you were still holding it while doing the roll-up. So you were doing like two things at once.
I still had my digital agency, rolling up companies, buying HVAC companies, selling it to private equity, roofing companies, bought it, sold it private equity, all while I still had my digital agency.
So was the digital agency creating leads for basically HVAC people, plumbers, roofers type of thing? Was that your niche?
That was our home services, lawyers, things like that. So after 30 years of being in marketing, I mean, as you know, agencies are going backwards on their multiplier. They've gone down drastically.
AI has just killed it. I mean,
everything. And I'm not just customer churn. Just everyone thinks they can get a better deal. Everyone's a guru now. I can't help but laugh. Like I'm 50 this year, you know, next month I'm 50. And I laugh like when I see this 25 or 28 year old. And I'm not saying don't tell me about living life until you live life. Don't tell me about marketing until you're old enough to even understand what a phone book is. Like, people just think, you know, they use key buzzwords that they're good at what they do and they're full of shit. So,
I'm going to ask you, I'm looking at your Instagram and I just wanted to look before I ask that question. You made a lot of money like me and mm-hmm. I don't see the flash, right? I don't see the flash, the cars, the planes, the jets. I want to ask you your opinion on that. And by the way, I know you're legit because you have 80,000 followers, not because of 80,000 followers. I see people that I've never heard of that have 2 million followers. I know they bought it. Like, I know you bought it, dude. Like, and these are people who are successful, but they're like, they're buying, and then you got to keep buying the likes, and then because you could tell by how many videos or, you know, the interaction, the comments, stuff like that. There's no flash on theirs. Tell me about what's your philosophy on the social media, the flash.
Listen, people that are flashy, I have no issue with. I mean, no offense, I'm not a flashy guy. It's just not my personality. That's my pickup truck right out front.
Oh, wow.
I drive a pickup truck. It's an Audi pickup truck. You know, I grew up poor. I grew up in a group home, foster care system, orphanage, one of 14 kids, different lifestyle. You know, I don't need, you know, my son asked me, you're talking about flash. My son asked me about, Dad, why don't you, he's 10 years old. Why don't you drive a Lambo? And I said, why would I drive a Lambo? First of all, I'm a bigger guy, so I don't know.
I know. They're very uncomfortable for, they're meant for short people.
And number two, if I was single, maybe I would drive a Lambo. I don't know. Right? I'm not being rude, right? But I'm married.
No, sure. We all know why. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
I probably would. And he goes to me, I never heard of the gentleman before, Andrew Tate. He's like, well, Andrew Tate has a bunch of them. So I went and started looking at Andrew Tate. Right? I know. And, you know, he does. But Andrew Tate, that's his persona, right?
Let me ask you a question. The example that is, let's use Tate as an example of, here you are, first of all, you know, first you're a trillionaire, then you're a billionaire. And you
I'm not multi-million.
Yeah, which I'm not too. I will be, but I'm not now, right? But my point is, there's people usually who flash have something to sell. Like, hypothetically speaking, if someone wants to flash and they're not selling anything, I'm like, okay, you're not selling a course or something like that, right? Because the notion is, buy my course or my training because you can end up with a private jet. And I think the next question would be like, well, how many clients took your training and then they have a Lambo or they have a jet? And I think I would take a look at it is like, sometimes on my social media, and you and I were talking, like, I travel literally all around the world. I flew to Australia, landed like, you know, 24 hours, landed at like 7:15, at 9:15, I'm on stage with like 4,000 people, Richard Branson, and I'm back on a plane at 1:30, another 22 hours back, right? And every city, I'd be like, man, that's an insane schedule. But people, like, who would you rather partner with? Somebody who's just like, go, 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 or just like partners on vacation all the time. And so when you have Elon Musk bragging about sleeping on the floor of his office, right? Or you have a guy like Jeff Bezos who literally owns, other people post his stuff, but he doesn't post. And I have a lot of wealthy people. And they said to me, if you have to flash it, that means you either don't own it, rent it, have a small weenie, or you're selling something to them.
Well, my wife would tell you I have a small weenie. I have nothing to sell. I just don't. I don't have nothing to sell. I think you go through life one time, right? And this is why I look at life. I have four sons, and I love my family.
You're unable to produce. You're unable to produce a daughter. That is, and some. And I've heard people with like six daughters, and they're not. So imagine there could be a business guaranteed to have a son, Lance Barker.
Yeah, and you know, people ask me all the time, you know, you're successful, but you're always with your family. If you go to my social media, almost everything's my family and there's some business stuff. I won't sacrifice money for my children. I coach my kids every single night for the most part. So my whole speaking, my whole business life is around my children. I get up at 3:34 in the morning. I work. My kids, I get them out of bed. I take my kids, get them ready for school. My wife takes them to school. I go work. I'm home. I coach my kids. I don't go to bars. I don't go out. I mean, unless my kids are with me 90% of the time. So when you ask about flash, I'm not a flashy guy. Like I'm a great communicator. I'm great at speaking on stage, but I'm going to stick to my core values of who I am, right? You're never going to see me drive a Lambo. I don't fly private because my wife doesn't want me to. She's petrified of something happening with me dying.
But the economics though, if you take a look at the economics, let me ask you, right? Let's say minimum 5,000 an hour. You come to Chicago, 3-hour flight there, back, $30,000. You start $30,000 in the hole where you could have, you know, done pre-check and clear and first class is maybe 700, right? And so do you look at that or do you like, I'm going to get $30,000 worth of value? I've always done the math and just.
I mean, I think people that fly private, for some people it makes sense, right? Like, you know, if that's what you, I don't judge, I'm curious, right? Like for me, I don't mind flying first class, sitting, getting work done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't, I mean, I don't drink on a plane normally 9 times out of 10. That's
with me. So. Yeah, but it's the first one on, first one off. I mean, it's really that is where you save the time.
You know, so, but I don't judge, you know, if somebody wants to be flashy and that's their thing, that's great. It's just, if you saw me and you ever really met me, you got to know me, you'd be like, man, this guy's fake trying to be flashy, right? Like, yes, I always wear nice watches. I have a big watch collection, but that's it. I wear jeans every day. I wear a t-shirt every day. I'll put a jacket on when I'm speaking or a big meeting, something like that. But no, I have nothing to sell because all I'm doing is partnering with people that beg me to partner, and I try and pick the right person. I'm going to help you build your company. So I'm in the weeds. My team's in your weeds. It's a totally different thing.
Let's take it from the beginning, how you do that. And I'm going to ask you about the keys to success versus not. So you come in, isolate a business. Take a current business that you started with, a plumber, HVAC, roofing, something like that. Take me to that someone comes into you. What is it about them? You're like, boom, I want to do this. And then the progression to all the way to exit.
I look at it this way, right? So I'll give you Cherry Roofing, right? I'll give you Cherry Roofing. That was the last one I just sold, right? About 6 months ago, 7 months ago, for mid 8 figures. The guy was doing less than $2 million a year when I met him, Josh Cherry. He had $20,000 in his bank account.
Revenue or profit?
Just $2 million total.
$2 million total, okay.
He was a client at OneSEO for years. Good guy, what I thought, right? Good guy, thought these things of him, calls me up, says, hey, listen, take 50% of my company, just get me there and help me sell it and get out of this. I'm done. I've been doing this forever. We meet, we go through it. I bring him on, bring him into my portfolio.
Hold on, one sec. So you have no other roofing company, or is he the first one?
He was my first roofing company.
Okay. So, and what was his profit?
I didn't even give a shit what his profit was.
Okay. That's my point. Sometimes people say as a platform company, I'll start the first one that does maybe $1 million EBITDA or 750, right? So you did not care. Why?
Because I knew I needed salespeople. And I knew this guy didn't know. If I meet someone, right, and they're doing $2 million and they can't get out of their own way, and they clearly can't get out of their own way, they don't understand sales processes, systems, leadership, or technology. All they have to do is listen. It's like I tell my kids, they got some of the best coaches around them. Just shut up and listen. And your success is going to find you. Just shut up and listen. Ask good questions and follow the program. It's that simple. There's a reason why people are successful, JT. The reason why you're successful over and over again, you know the playbook, you understand what works, you understand what doesn't work. It doesn't mean you're not going to have failures. I tell people that there's always failures. And normally the failures is the leadership in that organization. Every company I've ever had fail over my whole entire lifetime, I could always look back and say it was the leaders in that organization that couldn't move the needle. And so that's what it comes down to. So yeah, so then with inside of 18, 17 months, I had Cherry sold for mid 8 figures to a private equity.
Hold on. So you come in and you do your systems, your procedures. Now you have a team, right?
Yes.
Just give me an idea of the office. It's a huge office. Is it all the companies that you have, or how much is it allocated that who's working on the companies that you take over? Because clearly you're probably setting the vision and someone is implementing it, or you're getting down and dirty and doing it yourself.
No, so I have a CEO, Bill Rizzell, who oversees all my organizations and numbers, what's going on. Obviously, I still look at P&Ls every single day of each organization and go and look at it. Then I have Joe Lynn, who's my CFO. Then we have a sales trainer. Then we have now a general manager. I have a partner, Scott Bacasny, that's a great leader that helps out. We have an in-house marketing team here. We have an in-house HR team here. We have a full accounting team here. So everything is in place here, where all you have to worry about when you come to us is truly getting better as an individual operator and making sure that we take care of the team that we built inside that one particular organization. And then we scale it and we sell it. But everything is very transparent. We're going to sell your company in 24 to 36 months for a lot of money. You're going to become a multimillionaire. You can go run it back somewhere else outside that non-compete, or go retire, whatever you want to do.
So when you do a deal, you did 50-50 or?
Everything's 50-50.
So even when you buy the other companies that roll up, they still get 50-50 kind of with you? At some point, it's 50-50 of what the value of this company is. And then as you assemble other companies, or did you just take that one company to 4 million?
No, EBITDA. So I did that one. I did doing HVAC. I still own another HVAC company. I just bought an HVAC company out in Vegas. I took three roofing companies. I took Munns, Rubert, and American Best, three different roofing companies, all been around more than 45 years, diluted the stock, made it one company. It's our fourth month in business, and we're already doing $2 million a month in revenue.
So let me go back. Did you exit the roofing company, or is
Sorry, okay,
was it one company that you got to $4 million in EBITDA that sold, or did you merge other roofing companies with this
one company?
Wow.
One
so company. You went straight to, you went all in straight to growth. Bam.
So the HVAC company I bought went from 2 to 12 to 18 million. They're going to do 25 million this year.
So let's take that, the psychology. What is it? What are you doing that's scaling these companies and these systems? What's the sauce, secret sauce? Is the lead generation? Is it the online? Is it the people? Is it the, what is it?
So I, when I speak and I give speeches, it's all the same principles, right? You're a sales organization first, which if you don't understand that, like Google is the best sales organization. Facebook's the best sales. I mean, these guys have, I mean, Grant Cardone. Just go fill. I fill out his form for different things to see how many times they'll call me before they stop. I mean, they're calling you 3-4 times in a row, back to back. Like they're the ultimate sales organization, right? But it's the reason why they scale. Then you're a technology company. What's the technology you're going to be on? Is it Service Titan? Is it going to be Monday, Salesforce? I don't care, but you better have a technology and your whole team better be able to use it. And then it comes down to leadership systems, processes, accountability, financials. And we just run the same exact playbook in every organization, changed out the widget. And we've had great success with it. We're very fortunate.
So when you look at, you meet people who make it and people who don't. Why is it the people you know, they make it versus the one that does not?
The belief in themselves. They don't believe they're salespeople. So many people will tell me, I'm not a salesperson. I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm like, well, you're not ready to change your life. There's nothing wrong with being a salesperson if you deliver on what you say you're going to do. I think I'm the best salesperson I know, but I deliver on what I say I'm going to do. So it's an honor in that. I find honor in that. There's credibility in that. It's when you don't deliver on what you tell people, that's when it's just a bad situation.
What's your take on loyalty? You know, especially when you become successful, a lot of people come around, say one thing in your life, stuff like that. So how do you view you're a Philly old school guy. You throw snowballs at Santa.
We don't throw, I mean, I don't, but I mean, listen, this is the thing. Relationships matter. Loyalty is only as good as for what you could. Listen, you know, if I would have been born in the days of the kings, my brothers would have killed me. You know, true story. They would have had me assassinated, right? Because they weren't loyal to me. They were jealous of me. People hate success. People hate when you go from the gutter and grow because they got to look at themselves. You see, people say the person successful changes. That person that's successful is forced to change because of all the people, I call it the crab pot theory, trying to pull them back into the boiling water, trying to pull them back into the boiling water. No, I don't believe, I believe you're loyal as long as people are loyal to you and it's a true loyalty. I think if you can't change and keep evolving and the people next to you aren't happy for you and they want you to change and get better, then you got to leave them. I mean, I tell my children that I've left multiple people. It's funny you asked me that question. I looked at a picture from 5 years ago, 4 years ago at a Christmas breakfast where we did with our kids. And there was about 8 group of people there. And I only talked to 2 of them still. And I don't talk to the rest of them. And they're not in a bad way. They're not bad people. I love them. It's just, you know.
Is it you or is it them? That means that you who didn't continue or it felt like it was them or is it a mutual thing?
I don't think it's ever ends on a bad note. I think people just start to gravitate to what's important to them. Makes sense. I don't think that it's a bad thing. Like if I want to keep growing my careers and growing companies and building things out and do what's best for my family. And if you want to go to the bar, say, or if you don't want to come take this journey with me, I probably am not going to ask you to take the journey with me. You know, am I loyal to my wife? Yes, I'm loyal to my wife. Am I loyal to my children? Yes. Am I loyal to my business partners? Absolutely. I think
do you have friends?
Yeah, I have friends. I think, you know, your friends change, right? I have my best friends since elementary school, Seth Dunn, Chris Morisi, all them. I still talk to them, you know, spend time with them. But I think a lot of my friends are business relationships now. You become acquainted with business people and you hang out with them. You hang out with the kids that my kids play sports with. I hang out with their parents. Makes sense. Life just evolves. I have no desire to sit in a bar on a Friday, Saturday night with the guys.
Talking about high school days. No. Talking about the high school. Hey, Lance, you remember it on third down back in high school, right? And so if I was to say, Lance, what type of guy is Lance, right? Like, who is he? What kind of person he is? How would you describe yourself to this?
I think there's two versions of everyone, right? I think you get a good version and you get a bad version. And it all depends on how you treat that person, right? Like for me, I'm a caring and loving. I'll do anything for anyone. I want to build companies. I want to change people's lives. I want to help people become millionaires. I'm a big believer in helping juvenile delinquents and helping kids that are abused. It's my mission. So I think you have that version. Then you have the version where people say he's an arrogant, cocky, yada, yada, yada. No, maybe he's just a confident guy that's had a lot of success and he believes in himself and you don't believe in yourself. So don't let your insecurity try and make me have a bad day. Right. So I think it depends on, yes, truthfully.
It's funny. Do you ever notice that people say cocky and arrogant? I get that all the time too. And I'm not cocky. I'm just very confident. I know what I want. It's people who haven't made it yet. Like if someone way more successful is like, dude, you're being too cocky. And I also know when I'm a successful people, nothing I could talk about is going to impress them. Like, oh, wow, I have 78 companies and brands. Like, so what? Like, you know what I mean? Like I had $2 billion exits. Like there's certain people, like you have to have what's called situational awareness. And I always find that sometimes people that are not my level yet, and I start at their level, we're always trying to impress people above us, but you're not, because whatever you did, I've been there, done that. Great, you had this happened to me. Or when they use their excuse about why they're not successful, you're like, I had a similar problem, or I know someone's in the problem, they're there now. And the problem is that you dwell on the excuse, right? So it's hard sometimes, and I could see going with the friends about you're thinking business, you're thinking improvement, you're thinking about how can I do more? And people are just comfortable being who they are and not change, but then complain why they don't have. It's hard. It's hard to have a conversation with someone who can't talk about, you know, things that you're passionate, that are in essence proven. You know, as you took a tour of your office, I have a very similar basement. I have a basement of people that, you know, some of the, you know, whether it's a Messi, a trophy signed for me, or the Brady Lombardi trophy. I just got Wayne Gretzky to sign the Stanley Cup. I'll show you a picture. Like, I mean, I grew up as a Canadian with Wayne Gretzky, and I was just with him this past weekend. And then I'm on the ice with Wayne Gretzky. I'm thinking, here you are. Like, I used to be broke and my fans had no money, and I used to watch TV with Wayne Gretzky. And now I'm on the ice with Wayne Gretzky, you know, dropping the puck or holding the Stanley Cup. You know, that's improvement. And even at my age of like, I'm just trying to improve. Are you trying to become the best version of yourself? Like, you're very successful now. How do you, Lance, takes it to the next level where everybody comes to you, oh, you're amazing, you're successful, you've done it. Who do you look up to, or what do you do to become the best version of yourself?
So, I mean, I'll be very transparent with you. I actually just called my buddy, Sean Michael McCrane. He does training for people, right? Like, he's a health guy, right? And I just haven't been feeling great for the last 2 weeks. If something's been not majorly off, does that? I said, listen, what are you doing January 3rd to the 10th? He said, I'm not sure. I'm going to fly you and stay at my house. I need a reset, mental reset, physical reset. Let's go. He's like, let's go. His ticket's purchased. He'll be here. So I'm constantly, you know, looking for people that have done it. I hang out with entrepreneurs that are way more successful than me. I truly believe if you're the smartest guy in the room, you're probably definitely in the wrong room. I always tell people I like being the dumbest person in the room. I challenge myself business-wise every day, and I challenge myself to be a great father every day. Being a father is more important to me than business, but taking care of my business family is very important to me also. So I'm constantly trying to improve. I truly believe the best version of me won't come out until I'm in my 70s or 80s, and I'm looking forward to that version. The guy I'm at 50 definitely doesn't like the guy that was 40. The guy at 40 definitely didn't like 30. And, you know, I'm very blessed and grateful to be where I'm at, and I'm always trying to improve. And I think when you have that type of humbleness, the sky's the limit. I think when you're the arrogant, I know it all, I can do anything guy,
it comes to coaching. I don't need help. I can do it myself.
Absolutely.
Nothing's worse than being with the know-it-all too.
Yeah. And no one can do it by themselves. I've had so many great people impact me. I've had so many people open up doors for me. You know, I think that's where you want to play it forward for people. I just don't allow people to get that part of it.
What was the turning point when you take a look at your life, the person who we are today, the 30,000 square foot office, the family, the success, the selling of the companies and everything like that? What was a turning point? What was that one thing that, because you did that, it just snowballed to what you are today?
I changed my network. I started meeting people way more successful than me. And instead of being mad at them and saying, why not me? Which I have tattooed on my arm, right? Why not me? I literally, like, instead of that victim mentality that you talked about, like, why? You know what? Forget this. If they can do it, I'm going to do it. And I just started asking questions, started being humble. Hey, how do you do this? Hey, every business owner faces the same challenges. How do you scale? How do you get great people? How do you put systems in place? How do you do processes? Where are you advertising? You know, these are the things. How do I get things at lower discount cost to buy, right? To squeeze my margins. I mean, everyone, whether you're talking to private equity firms, whether you're talking to anyone, all has the same problems. And I think great business people aren't afraid to have those conversations and talk about it.
When you exit, are you reaching out to these people to say, hey, want to buy, or they come find you, or they see?
I have such relationships now with so many private equity firms. They're in here once a month, different ones talking to me, sitting with me, having conversations, talking about what's going on in the industry, portfolio, technology, marketing, all that stuff.
So you got there too. Also too, you look back at a mistake that you made that of course you learned from, but probably not the smartest thing you did that, you know, could have not been where you are here today, or maybe this mistake was the greatest life lesson that made you more successful.
My biggest life lesson that I tell people in business was I treated people like shit on my way up at AT&T. I thought I had that arrogance. I was a young officer at AT&T. Thought I was better than everyone. Really, when I came, because what goes up must come down. I tell everyone that. What goes up must come down some way or another. And, you know, I came down. I ate humble pie. And I'll never do that again. And I just think if you treat people to the best of your ability, right? Not everyone gets treated the same. I say that to people. My A players are going to be treated. They might be different than my B players. And my B players are going to be way differently treated than my D and F players, right? I mean, that's just life. I mean, go look at any organization of sports or anywhere. People get treated differently, right? And it isn't based on, I tell people, race, color, gender, all this bullshit people want to make up. It's based on, are you a doer or not a doer? If you're a doer and you can do things, nobody wants to lose that person, that organization. If you aren't achieving things and moving the needle, no one gives a shit if you're in the organization or not. You're just a cost.
When you look back at when you sold that exit, right? You get that huge eight-figure check. How does it feel the day it hits, the paperwork is signed, you get the check? And how does that feel that day? And what happens the next day?
I'll be honest with you. I didn't feel anything. And I just worked the day I got the check, and I worked the very next day. I'd be lying to you. On every exit, I never took a day off. My wife forced me to go to Bahamas for a week, and I left after day three with my wife. She understood. It's just like, I love my wife. My wife, I think, is the most beautiful woman in the world, but no offense, you can only go to Pound Town so much. I mean, and I love the Bahamas. It's a nice place, but.
So she stayed behind and then, oh, you was with the kids.
She came home with me. No, she came home with me.
Oh, but when she left 3 days, you're like, I'm out.
It was just.
And you go to the sand, you sit there, and then you think about all the things you want to do. I get it. That's the ADD inside us.
I mean, and you know, you're sitting by a pool and you're drinking, which isn't good for you. So I don't want to sit there and drink all day. And, you know, I'm not a big sightseer guy. You know, I'm not.
So what are you? What are you? Like, so you're not like a sightseer. You're not an adventurer. You're not an experienced guy. What are you?
I love being with my family. I love being with my kids. And people say to me all the time, oh, you're going to regret that when you're older because you're going to grow up and get out of the house. And I'm like, know what? I doubt I'm going to regret it. I never heard someone say on their deathbed, I wish I worked more. I never wish I didn't spend more time with my kids. You know, my biggest thing is I don't care what my kids are doing. My kids want to play baseball. I hate baseball. I'm going to let my kids play baseball this year, and I'll be at every one of their games. Like, I just want to be with my kids. I know it sounds stupid.
But you know what? It's, you know, if you force your kids to like what is it that you like, then they probably won't like it. And you know, people are different people, different personalities. It's interesting, the minds. And you know, everyone keeps saying that they're only young once. And then when they're older, they don't play with you anymore. They have their own friends, their own life. And then you, oh, dad, you know what I mean? So it's a very good point. Last question. What's your favorite quote and why?
My favorite quote is probably you never make a bucket that you don't shoot. And the reason why is, doesn't matter if you fail or make the bucket, you're going to go make the bucket again. I'd say to my sons all the time, in football, wrestling, which we do a lot of, doesn't matter if you throw interceptions and lose a game. We're going back to work the next day. Wrestling, the same thing. If you lose a match, I don't think people realize you have to be willing to lose to win. And I think the greatest entrepreneurs, I don't care who, I've had businesses fail, and I get back up the next day and I go right back to work. It's just not a big deal. I don't harp on it. I learn from it. I move on. Sports are the same thing. So you'll never make a bucket that you don't take a shot.
So you and I, this is the first time we've talked, first time we've met. We DM'd a couple of times because your flight got delayed and you were stuck in the air, and we're trying to reschedule a time. And I'm realizing I don't even know my schedule. Like I don't know nothing. Someone tells me where to go to show up, because if not, then I'm like, yeah, let's do it there. And it doesn't happen, then I'm in trouble because I just messed up the whole flow of the schedule. So what do you think, me, now that you and I have had this conversation, what do you think?
Well, I know you're successful. I think you have a great personality. You're charismatic. I like your show. Like I told you, I never read your book. I do listen to audibles. I think, you have a lot to offer people. I think you actually coach people for free, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you know why I do it? Once in a while, I find these gems, and I can't tell you how many deals or amazing people. But you have to kiss a lot of frogs to the. I mean, listen, I got people paying me millions of dollars. Don't get me wrong, but just randomly, and it's so. You know what frustrating part is? It's just like, hey, I'll coach you for free. I'm a seven-figure coach, right? I got even calling me to help all the time. I already got my own businesses, and I say, you know what? Tuesday at 1 p.m. free coaching, and I'll be like, 2,000-3,000 people will sign up. Or sometimes like 1,000, and you'll have like 87 show, right? Because they didn't pay. And here you are, I'm talking to one-on-one. I mean, and then you got one time, like you got the excuses, you got this, or they got this stupid ideas like, hi, I'm looking to create a platform that's gonna, and I'm like, you're not a platform. You want to create a website and you don't have any customer. You're a website, or they have this stupid idea that's not gonna make any money, but they're so in love with it. And or I'm looking to do a $100 million deal or a $30 million deal, but you don't have a pot to piss in. Ain't nobody gonna give you like $30 million. You haven't done it. And then they argue with you, right? And it's so mentally draining. But once in a while, you find people and you're like, wow. Like,
It's it, the one thing I'll tell you is this, and I say this to everyone. I'm not a smart man by any means. I'm actually probably a dumb guy, I would tell people, right? But what I'm very good at is this. You see success, I duplicate success. And it's really not that hard. What I mean by that is monkey see, monkey do. I say this to everyone. Like, if everyone had their parent yell at them, you keep hanging out with them, you're gonna jump off the bridge with them, things like that, right? So all you do is just go, every business I've ever built, I just went and I go cold call some of the most successful people I know in that industry, ask them for their time. I ask them for their advice, playbooks, whatever. And whatever they say to me, I just actually do it. I don't even argue. Like,
That's
why am I,
coachability. Yeah.
but I say to my sons all the time, if you're coachable, you're going to be successful. If you're not coachable, nobody wants to be around someone that's not coachable. And if you know so much, why aren't you so successful? And don't tell me all the why you're not
I know
successful. There's
my
a reason why
parents,
you're not successful.
COVID, yeah, every excuse on the other side.
Everyone else got, other people got around COVID. I made millions in COVID, millions. My companies thrived in COVID, millions.
You know, the funny part is I had Phil Jackson last year at my event, and I asked him, I said, who's the greatest? And he said, of course, I expected Michael Jordan. And he said, Michael Jordan. And then he said, then Kobe. And he said, why? He says, Michael Jordan was the most coachable person I've ever met. He goes, at first, he'd fight me and do it this way. And the minute you start listening, he goes, I could see things he doesn't see from a different perspective. And he would be like, tell me what to do. And then he would lead by example, hardest guy in the practice. So if you're slacking off and Michael's going, like to hear the story. And I'll tell you this about Phil Jackson, right? I've interviewed everybody, a lot of people. And interviewing him was like, I don't know if he liked me or he didn't like me. So I joke around, like, Phil, do you like me? He goes, do you want me to like you? Like, and so you felt like you are working so hard to impress him. Right, to work hard so he'd be happy for you. And then so it was like, I got it. Like it was to be, and he had never done events 10 years. I mean, he's big, his knees hurt, you know what I mean? Like he's in a little bigger ass ranch in Montana. He just happened to be in LA and he's like, yeah, why not? Which I was shocked, right? And I keep replaying that moment. And I was like, and so here's a funny story. I told my agent, I want us to reach out to Phil and I want him to coach me. You tell me how much, and every month I want to talk to that guy, and I want to be able to share certain things to see, like, what does he say? It was good enough for Michael. It was good enough to win, 11, 12 championships. So, it was interesting, and you get this thrill, and it was funny because then I asked Gretzky this past weekend. I said, "Are you the GOAT?" Everybody knows Gretzky's the GOAT. You take a look at it, he goes, "I'm not the GOAT." Different era, different people, and every area has its own best player. And I'm like, you know, classic answer. And then I go to his agent. It's like, he's the goat. He goes, goats never say they're the goats. Everybody else says they're the goats, because the minute you think you're the goat, it gets to your head.
No doubt. Yeah, you're right.
You're
gonna eat humble pie.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, Lance, is there a website where people can check you out? I know your Instagram, and I'll put it in the comments.
At LanceBachman.com.
And by the way, Lance, is that one of your better interviews? Do you want to officially put this on the record, down in the book?
Yeah, this was the best interview I ever had. Thank you, my man.
I just think that was too much smiling and positivity. Yeah, I think all interviews are great. That's Lance. I don't care. I think all interviews are great. Now that I know you, I don't know. I have to replay the body language of Lance based on how he answered every question. This sounded way too, yeah, sure, dude. If you think you're a great interview, it's a great interview. So, which by the way, I've had bad interviews, which is now why I'm a little bit more selective, because there's nothing worse than sitting there counting and asking the same questions I've been asked many times. But Lance, you're a phenomenal guy. I think it was very insightful, and it went by really, really fast. We'll have to do it again. And I think the question to you is this. Would you like a signed jersey from Brady or a signed football?
Signed football. Thank you so much.
Done, brother. Done. And that is a promise. By the way, do me a favor, everyone listening. Like, follow, share. Leave a review. Subscribe on YouTube. It doesn't cost you anything to do these things. Add value. You know, check out Lance's Instagram. Really good, valuable content. And a lot of value that he gives everywhere as well. It doesn't cost anything for you to do these things, right? If you're getting good value from this, you keep listening. And believe me, one day you're going to want people to like your post and your videos and your podcast. And don't be surprised if people like me and Lance do that, because how you do one thing is how you do everything. Thank you, Lance. Phenomenal interview. We'll see everybody on the next show.
Thank you.